Chapter 50. Mud, glorious mud. I was eager to leave Adelaide as quickly as possible, following a distressingly messy relationship breakup. So made a beeline for Sydney, my hometown, where I knew I'd be supported, as I recovered from the split. Fortunately, before I left, I'd completed a year-long postgraduate teaching qualification, a qualification I knew would be very handy down the track. When I returned to Sydney, I moved in with my adopted aunt, and by way of a distraction, reconnected with accountant Peter Bluey, my New Guinea friend Richard Carlson's business partner. The partnership was convenient, as Richard, a Qantas pilot, was always on the lookout for interesting money-making opportunities in his downtime. For me, the TAFE outreach workshops continued intermittently, as did weekend workshops in regional centres, with the Crafts Council of New South Wales, freeing me up to explore country New South Wales with Peter, both by car and light aircraft. On the domestic front, my aunt's health was deteriorating, the result of smoking cigarettes for many years. One morning I found her unconscious on the bathroom floor. Terrified, I managed to drag her to the bedroom. She wasn't breathing, so I gave her mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. Almost immediately, she began breathing again and regained consciousness. I then made a quick call to her doctor, after which she was whisked off to hospital. A week or so later, after being strongly advised to quit smoking, she was discharged. But as soon as she arrived home and closed the front door behind her, she lit up one of her favorite Sobrani, Black Russian cigarettes, and began puffing away. I saw red. From my standpoint, her addiction overrode common sense, and I realized I could no longer endure the waves of emotional pain I experienced, whilst watching the slow inexorable decline of the woman I loved so much. I realized that I had to find somewhere else to live. Fortunately, I had friends at the end of the street. The family offered me the spare bedroom that had been vacated by their eldest daughter, who'd recently married and moved to Wagga Wagga, on the Riverina. Theirs was a bustling household, with three school-aged teenagers, and their cute black dog. Peter ran his accountancy practice from an office opposite the courthouse, in Oxford Street, Darlinghurst. Tax avoidance was his specialty. He offered his clients bottom-of-the-harbour tax schemes, and utilised his knowledge of the bush, to find agricultural properties in regional New South Wales, to sell on to cashed-up New Guinea expatriates. Richard Carlson's role in the partnership was to recruit buyers from his extensive circle of friends, living in the New Guinea highlands. Another of Peter's business ventures was a carrot-growing operation at Bow Creek, just out of Deepwater, in northern New South Wales. His partner in this venture was an academic, who lived on site and managed the enterprise. The property adjoined the Butterleaf National Park and comprised well-drained granite soil, ideal for growing, harvesting, processing, and transporting carrots, in all weathers. A huge shed had been built beside the creek to house a carrot washer, a carrot dryer, and other machinery. The operation was active from September through to May, and its location was ideal for supplying the Brisbane markets. This is how it worked. On receipt of an early afternoon order, the team swung into action. Carrots were immediately harvested, washed and bagged by local women, loaded into a truck, and delivered to the Brisbane markets by 4 o'clock the next morning. In addition to fresh carrots, the operation had another extremely lucrative sideline. Drying diced carrots for use with 1080 poison, to control rabbit numbers. The operation was rocketing along, but just as all the infrastructure costs had been covered, and good profits were predicted, disaster struck. Nematode had infiltrated the property, bringing the carrot cropping enterprise to a grinding halt. The story I was told, to explain the demise of the operation, was as follows. Nematode, a soil-borne disease, came in on carrot seed. Desperate for seed, quantities were sourced from two different suppliers, so it wasn't possible to ascertain from which supplier the contaminated seed had come. When Peter first took me to visit Bow Creek, the carrot operation had been defunct for quite some time, though the subsequent disentanglement of the business partnership rumbled on for years. As well as the ugly corrugated iron shed, Bow Creek had a charming, almost falling down weatherboard house, attached to the original slab hut, that was built by the first white settlers. I fell in love with the building, and as a committed renovator, immediately saw its potential. Always up for a challenge, I suggested renovating it. But the renovation would have to wait, as there was another very exciting building project about to begin. The construction of a large mud brick homestead, and I wanted to be involved. The household where I was living was in a state of flux, as the parents, Wendy and Wal, were working through the dissolution of their marriage. There was a large Pole Hereford stud to be sold, with Wendy keeping 6,000 acres of rough country at the back of the property. This new block, named Horse Creek, was to have an architect design 5-bedroom mudbrick house built on it. The design incorporated a narrow north-facing clerestory window that brought sunlight into the main space that combined kitchen, dining, and living, with fireplaces at each end of the room. I was involved in the project from the get-go, as I felt obliged to offer my labor in lieu of rent. During the Christmas holidays of 1978, the Horse Creek shearing shed became our base of operations. Wendy took charge of feeding the labor force and cooking over an open fire for up to 8 hungry workers each day. By the time I arrived, most of the timber framing was up and the brickmakers were hard at work. The bricks were made in the bed of the newly dug dam behind the shearing shed, where masses of suitable clay had been uncovered whilst digging out the dam. To make bricks, the tractor was used to mix the ingredients, clay, straw, and water, the mixture then allowed to stand overnight. Next morning, it was bucketed into individual metal molds and leveled before the mold was gently lifted off. The process was repeated over and over again until the mixture ran out. In the late afternoon, the last job was to prepare a batch of mixture for the following day. I can't remember how many bricks were made, but hundreds were needed for both the external and internal walls of this very large building. Fortunately, summer was long and hot, with no rain to hamper brick production or building construction. I wasn't part of the brick-making crew. My job was to lay the bricks, using mortar made of clay and water. Even though the walls were not load-bearing, to strengthen them, we laid a strip of narrow chicken wire every third course that was nailed to the timber uprights at each end of the wall. When the walls were complete, we covered them with mud render to create a not-so-smooth surface, thereby retaining the character of the handmade bricks. There was no running water at Horse Creek. So, every couple of days, we'd squeeze into a vehicle for the 60-kilometer round trip to the Murray River. We'd jump in to cool off, whilst the water soaked off the layers of caked-on dirt from our skin and clothes. We'd then adjourn to the pub for an icy cold drink, whilst our clothes continued to drip, after which we drove the dusty road back to Horse Creek. I continued to lay bricks for some weeks, until Peter came to pick me up. We then returned to Sydney to begin planning the Bow Creek cottage renovation at the defunct carrot farm, because Peter and I were of one mind. We were determined to get out of Sydney. The next chapter of my life was about to begin. On reflection. Mud brick construction. I was thrilled to be involved in the building project at Horse Creek. There was something primal about using earth to create a structure to provide protection against the elements. I was more than happy to help, because I had an ulterior motive. I wanted to learn how to make and lay mud bricks for a possible future project. But the labor intensiveness of all aspects of this build put me off. I decided that from here on in, I'd put my creative energy into less ambitious house renovation projects. Peter Bluey. Peter was 17 years my senior. At the start of our relationship, I was filled with expectancy as I visualized a productive creative partnership, combining Peter's money management know-how and my renovating skills, with emphasis on good design. The future looked promising. I felt secure in his company and was grateful to have him as a reliable backstop, a father figure of sorts, with many years of life experience that I could draw upon when needed. Facts. Nematode. Further research has shown that the nematode is a tiny parasitic worm that was most likely brought to Bow Creek on vehicles or farm machinery, not seed. Alternatively, the culprit may have been Carvy, a virus that also infects carrots. As it was, the operation stopped dead once the paddocks revealed their first crop of twisted carrots. Needless to say, there was no market for imperfect carrots.